Blog Talk Radio.
That'll get you going, won't it? This is Dr. John Stamey welcoming everybody to the ScaryCast Network. And this is our premier show on our new network. We feature Clyde Lewis and Ground Zero, the number one paranormal podcast in the world, every weeknight at 10 o'clock. And tonight we have the original ScaryCast from 9 to 9.50 Eastern time, 9.55 Eastern. And we got a great show tonight. First of all, I want to introduce our co-hosts. Number one, the Surgeon General of ScaryCast from the Midlands of South Carolina. Here is Dr. Trey Dunaway. How are you doing tonight, Trey?
I'm doing great, John, and congratulations on your announcement. I think that's just wonderful. Congratulations.
Well, thanks a lot. It took every one of you to make this possible. I was just very pleased when I got the call from Ron Palmer from Ground Zero, saying they wanted ScaryCast to be the first internet partner of Ground Zero. So we're very privileged to have that, and we're glad to have you as our Surgeon General. So thanks a lot. And from Houston, Texas, all the way down there in oil country, and a real save the day kind of guy when he came up here, Kyler Smith. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. I was actually going to say the same thing, because that call I got earlier today, you telling the announcer, that was pretty cool. Yeah, I'm very surprised. It's awesome.
Well, we're excited. As I said, it took every one of you and all of our hard work and all of our great guests. So I wanted to thank you, too. Now, the Queen of ScaryCast, Robin McCrae, will be here. She's probably tied up just a little bit. Sometimes she has folks that she's helping, so that's normally what happens. So I'm sure she'll be right here with us. Now, tonight, we've got a really cool guest. This is a guy, what I like about it is all the people, all my friends tend to find me. I don't have to find them. And he called up wanting a booth at the Frogman Festival in Loveland, which is really greater Cincinnati, Ohio. And he said, well, John, let me show you some of my artwork. I'm an artist. I said, I don't know. We're kind of full up. So he sent me a link, and I said, oh my goodness, you've got a place for sure. And by the way, I need some things done. You want to do it? And he said, sure. So he's been an artist for ScaryCast and for my Comic Cons ever since. Does a great job, and so glad to have him from Ohio. I assume he's from Ohio. I've actually never asked. Brian Nyford, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And I just want to let you know, somebody's in our chat saying nobody let me in. That might be your other host.
Could be Robin. Knocking on the door, John.
It's an 803 number. I'll click on it and see what happens. Make sure nothing goes wrong. Who's calling in from area code 803?
John, it's Robin. I've been here the whole time.
I'm you know what? I'm sorry. I'm dyslexic. And I kept reading 804, and I thought it was from Richmond. I didn't know. Well, I apologize. The Queen of ScaryCast is with us tonight, and thank you very much. You've been on hold for 4 minutes. We're so glad to have you here. And again, wanted to say thank you very much for all of your hard work for keeping ScaryCast alive till we founded the ScaryCast Network tonight, first show. And we got Brian Nyford. He's a wonderful artist. So, Brian, first of all, tell us a little bit about what you do. You're a cryptid artist. I think that's what your claim to fame is, and you're quite a good one, and I'm going to reannounce it. Everybody needs to go to facebook.com/scarycast and see three of Brian's great pieces of art. We've got a pen and ink drawing of Dracula that I put up. We've got a pen and ink drawing, an incredible pen and ink drawing of Frankenstein, and he's got the Frogman that we commissioned for the Frogman Festival, which is going to be March 4th in Cincinnati, Loveland, Ohio. So, Brian, tell us a little bit about your artwork and how did you get started as a cryptid artist?
So I do want to tell you a little fun fact, and then I'll get into that about that Frankenstein. It's one of my favorite pieces I've done, and I actually – that's an 11 by 14, and I actually drew that entire thing live on air in about an hour and 15 minutes on a different podcast. So it was a – it was a really quick come together, but it turned out perfect, or as perfect as I hoped it could. I used to draw a lot when I was a kid. I was fairly decent as a kid, and at the point I got to high school, my art teachers wouldn't teach me anything anymore. They just let me, they'd say, just draw a comic book or draw something. Tell me what you're going to do this year and do it by the end of the year. So that's what I started doing towards the end of my high school career. And I always wanted to be a comic book artist, but I grew up in Lima, Ohio. And to be honest with you, back then, the internet wasn't a thing. Obviously, you know, I'm almost 50 years old. You didn't have the availability of Facebook and Instagram and ways to get your art out there. And I sent in submissions to a couple different publishers at the time. It was pretty much just Marvel and DC, and Image was just coming around, but they weren't touching anybody that wasn't, you know, Todd McFarlane and the people that started it. So I just kind of fell flat. I never got anywhere with it and realized I had to grow up and get a real job, and did that, and have been doing that since I've been 21. And I'm getting towards the end of my career. And a few years ago, about 10 years ago, I was actually just driving down this real dark and dreary road, and I hadn't been drawing, and I hadn't been doing anything for years. And I just had this weird idea of Nazi werewolf popped into my head, and it was around Halloween, and I thought, well, that's weird, and I ended up sketching a Nazi werewolf, and I thought, well, who would fight Nazi werewolves? And I think, because they're obviously bad, and eventually Dracula came into my head for that. And then from there, the Nazi werewolves disappeared, and I came up with a different big bad for an idea, and I just started fleshing out the story. Well, as I started fleshing out the story and outlining it, I started drawing character sketches and different versions of Dracula, and then eventually Frankenstein's monster became one of the heroes as well. And I started drawing Frankenstein's monster a lot and came up with my version of it, several different versions. And eventually I looked at it, and I had 12 issues outlined on paper, and I thought, I should just start drawing this. So I started throwing myself into drawing a lot more, and eventually, before I knew it, I had the first three issues fleshed out. And I started doing a lot of horror art on this. Like, I started drawing monsters of all types, you know, and it just became kind of a thing that I really enjoyed doing. And then I decided I was going to try and publish it. So a few years back, I took the first three issues. I had no idea what I was doing, and threw them on Kickstarter. And by all luck and the grace of God, it was successful funding. And then all of a sudden, I'm having to print books and ship them out. And then I did issue four, and it was successful. And then I did issues five and six, and they were successful. And then recently, at the end of this year, last year, I did issue seven and eight. And we're successful, and I'm just finishing shipping those out. I have about 30 more people to ship those out to, and all the shipping will be done on that. And I'm working on issues 9 and 10. And so the basic idea of the story is it takes Dracula and Frankenstein's monster and turns them into the heroes of the story, and it takes place at the end of 1945 during World War II. End of World War II during 1945, and tells the history in flashback form over the previous 500 years about why Dracula and Frankenstein's monster are actually after Adolf Hitler and the Nazis. But that's what got me to the point where I started doing Comic Cons, and one day I started going to Comic Cons and started selling my art there and my books there, and then one day through my Facebook scroll, a couple weeks ago, another person that I know that goes to the Comic Cons had been tagged by their wife on and it showed the Frogman Festival, and I thought, yeah, why not? Let me give it a shot. And now here I am.
I think
you see what Frogman can do for you, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that is just a great story, and that this this subordinated talent of yours is allowed to be resurfaced, and you're meeting with financial success. It's just wonderful when something you create, somebody's willing to shell out some money for it. It just gives you a great feeling. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I was really nervous when I first launched the Kickstarter, and I thought, is this good enough? Is anybody going to be interested? And, you know, and people were. So it was great. And now I'm starting to do a lot more things outside of just the book. I've got, you know, obviously I just did this Frogman poster and a couple other things coming up. I don't want to spoil them for John. They'll be for him to announce. But along with that, you know, I'm getting interest from other publishers that are asking me to do variant covers for them. And then my commission work is picking up where people actually will reach out and say, hey, will you draw this on a blank cover for me, or will you draw this on a 11x17 for me? And that kind of stuff is great to see starting to happen. And I've had a lot of help from some great people in the business, some people that are independent publishers that got their start just like me and, you know, have been around longer, like Adam Fields and Rodney Fike. They've all been great helping me out getting started.
Well, that's great. I'm sorry. Please go ahead, Trey.
I also find it interesting that it went to the horror aspect of that. Was that true? And when you're in high school and where you're a younger person, was that always an attractant, or what is it other genres?
Oh, so, you know, that's a great question, because it was. So when I was very young, I loved the Saturday. Every Saturday I would sit in a room, a little black and white TV, and watch the old classic Universal monster movies. Every Saturday there was at least one on, and I loved them. I thought they were amazing. This is when I was, you know, 8 years old. I thought they were great. And so I fell in love with those characters very young, but I also fell in love with Batman at a young age. And I think my love for monsters and horror kind of moved away a little bit. And I started, you know, collecting comic books, and loved the Batman comics and the Daredevil comics and basically anything that Frank Miller did. And then I got, as I was in my teens, I was blessed to have some of the more thought-provoking comics that, like, by Alan Moore's Watchmen. And then eventually, you know, around comes Frank Miller's The Dark Knight, which changed comic books at that point. I remember seeing a cover of Rolling Stone with a giant cover of The Dark Knight on it, and there was a feature story on Frank Miller in that, and I thought, wow, this has become hugely mainstream now. And it's, of course, much more mainstream than it was even back then, but for a magazine like that to feature a story about Frank Miller and The Dark Knight, it was huge. And that comic changed comics, and if you don't read comics, you wouldn't know, but it was a take on the Batman in the future. It was the first Elseworld comic is what they ended up calling them. They didn't call it at that time, but basically said Batman had been retired for 10 years at this point, and where was he, and what had happened with Gotham City after that, and then he comes back, obviously, because The Dark Knight Returns. And it was a four-issue series, and it was very adult or in nature, very serious. You know, it was political. It had all kinds of different aspects of it. And so that I really started liking those type of comics, and then I just kind of got away from comics altogether. And in my adult life, I really started like horror movies, and I'm a huge Michael Myers fan. I love the Halloween movies, even the bad ones, just because I'm a big fan of that. And then, you know, every now and then Universal would pop out a new movie trying to restart their dark universe. When they came out Dracula Untold, or when they came out with the Tom Cruise Mummy movie, And, you know, they've been trying all along. They did the Van Helsing movie. And every time one of those came out, I realized how excited and giddy I got to go see them. And even if they were bad, I liked them because they were about these characters that I grew up loving as a very young boy. And I think that is what made me want to go the direction of the comic book about monsters. And I also, having gotten older, I have a hard time really enjoying mainstream comic books. They're all the same thing over and over again with heroes and tights. And I am just not a big fan of them. It's very rare for me. And I have a local comic shop that I go to on a regular basis. And they're a huge supporter of me too. They book signings and stuff, and they're great people. Pete Bell, the guy that runs the shop, is just awesome. He just is an awesome guy. And I don't buy many mainstream comics. Now if I buy a comic, it's an independent comic. So and I look for the small press. Now that I see that I'm a small press, you know. And so I try to support them, and to be honest with you, most of the mainstream comics just don't have storylines as good as the independent ones do now. But I think that my love of horror at a young age, I've been babbling on about this, but I think the love of horror at a young age just kind of came back in my adult life.
Super story.
Thank you.
It is. It's a great story. And Brian, I had an idea popping in my head. We are going to be celebrating World Purchase Night, which is the end of April, 1st of May, with one of our podcasts, and that corresponds to Bram Stoker's great short story, Dracula's Guest. So when we're done with the show, I need to talk to you about what kind of a poster we need to do for that, because, you know, there was the movie Dracula's Daughter was one of those Universal films. And by the way, I'm just like you. I sat in my room with the curtains drawn on Saturday afternoon at 1 o'clock watching Shock Theater, which was the syndication of those old horror films. And oh my God, I can't believe that you and I had like the same upbringing in horror. And I'm sitting here looking at a Dracula Funko Pop right now. I mean, what more can I say? And anyway, I'm gonna have to hold it now for the rest of the broadcast. But anyway, that's a great story. Robin or Kylie, you got any comments for Brian? I mean, I've been super entertained.
I just
reminded me of my childhood.
I do. First of all, Brian, I don't know what background noise we have tonight, but I apologize. It sounds like something scraping in the background. I have no idea what it is.
Yeah.
But
I don't know what's going on. There's somebody hammering something somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know. But I went on at John's suggestion just a minute on air, and he said, you know, go on ScaryCast, and you can see some of his drawings. I applaud you. These are incredible.
Thank you.
Like, they really and truly are unbelievable. I knew they would be good. John had told me that they were really good. I did not realize the quality. These are phenomenal.
Thank you.
They really and truly are. Now, John was telling me that you draw cryptids.
Yes. I just started drawing cryptids recently. I'm working on a Mothman right now. I know there's lots of takes for different cryptids out there, and I want to do something unique for each one of them if possible, you know, and I'd like to have a whole collection of cryptid drawings. The Frogman, I went through two or three different style designs for him and just ended up really loving that. I did two or three different style designs, and that one came together in about 10 minutes. And then within hours, I think from John asking me to draw that, I think I sent him the first version. And I really loved the way that one turned out. I just did another one for John for something upcoming, but I'm going to start.
Go ahead and tell him about it, man.
All right, so
it's out on the streets in Georgia. I'll tell you that.
Good. I just did the poster for the Georgia Bigfoot Convention that Dr. John is going to be running at the Dillard House on April 1st in Dillard, Georgia. So I just got that done, and I had actually sent him one version of Bigfoot, and he was like, you know, you can't really show the front of Bigfoot because it's just the way it is. So he's in more
May
of a plastic.
May I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you do drawings off of photos?
Do I do drawings off of photos? I look at photos.
Yeah.
I look real life. Yeah, I use photo reference. Yeah, for sure.
I would love it sometime. Obviously, we don't have time tonight to talk to you about that because I've got a few. I mean, I've got several pictures of them, but there's a few that I would actually like to get drawn.
Okay.
And I had a couple people try to do it, and the one person that tried it, it came out looking like a cartoon, which was not accurate at all. And then another person, it looks like an actual Bigfoot. However, it didn't look like the one that I sent the picture of.
I definitely do commission work, and I draw very realistic. That's my style that I like to see. I find artists definitely emulate the styles they like to look at, and I'm a very my style is very realism based. I do it in all different. I do digital. I do pencils. I do inks. Like the Dracula and the Frankenstein monster that are up there were just done in a matter of an hour plus with pencil and ink mixed media and markers.
Phenomenal. You really do a great job.
Thank you. And so I do look at photos to draw. I definitely do that. That the frogman that you see there was just mostly out of my head, except for I actually took a picture of a frog so I could get the coloring right, because I don't stare at frogs, so I didn't know.
Well,
about
I have lizard man, but the lizard man photo I have, it's only him from the chest up. I didn't get pictures
okay.
of the lower part of the body.
Well, whatever you got, we can work on something for sure. And if you guys think about it, I'm Brian Neifert Art on Facebook. He's got my name on there, but he wasn't able to tag me, I don't think. And if you guys follow
that's
me there,
K-N-I-F-E-R, Neifer.
No, there's no K. It's N as in Nancy. It's a German spelling, so German pronunciation. It's N as in Nancy, E as in Edward, I as in Ida, and then Ford like the truck. So it's Brian with an I, Neifert Art.
Gotcha.
Right, and he's great. I mean, I'm going to take credit for finding Brian Neifert. That's all I got to say. He's wonderful, and he's already got two more commissions coming from me as soon as this is over. I like your idea of what you're doing, Brian. I really do. And thank you, Robin. And Robin, I will share numbers between you and Brian so that y'all can talk. Is that okay?
That would be lovely.
Yep. I feel very fortunate when people really like my art. I've got a wonderful fiance who's very supportive of me, and I come to points where I start to doubt what I'm doing, and she snaps me back into place, and, you know, we won't be doing so hot at a convention right to start off, and she's like, just keep the faith, you're fine. And she's sitting right there beside me. She said, trust me, it's going to be a good one. You know, and by the end of the convention, I'm like, wow, we did really well, you know, and she's just like, see? So I'm fortunate to have a really great support system here at home, because I think every artist doubts themselves from time to time. And I know one particularly that I really like. He's another local Dayton artist, and he's constantly doubting himself. And I'm always trying to encourage him because this stuff is amazing. And, you know, it's awesome when you get that feedback from people telling you that it's humbling when you get that feedback, people telling you the way you did is fantastic. It really, I mean, I hear it from my fiance, but she obviously loves me and is obviously biased, but to hear that she's right, it makes me happy.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Thank you.
Well, you know, that's wonderful. Glad you like it. The more people that like Brian's artwork, the happier I get. Kyler, have you got a question or comment for Brian?
Yeah, actually, I was listening to, or I guess I was watching your little Kickstarter video earlier while we were introducing everybody, and I see a bunch of, like, collectibles you got in there in the background, and I see some Batman, maybe a little bit of, looks like Thor, Can you like go into those and explain why you chose those to be in your collection?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. So I started, when I decided I was going to do this, I realized I needed an office. So when I need an office, of course I have to, you know, spend money and put stuff in it that I want to look at that I'll never, you know, need in my life. But so I obviously have had a love of Batman. So I have some, and you may not see it, some of the stuff probably changed around since that Kickstarter video, but I have like, in that case that spans a 12-foot long wall, I have some 1966 Batman toys and statues. I actually have a Batman, Adam West Batman statue that was limited to one in 1966 for the year that the movie or that the show came out. And then I also, the Thor and Captain America memorabilia, you'll see that it's less about Thor and it's more about Avengers Endgame. I absolutely loved their portrayal, Chris Evans' portrayal of Captain America. I thought he was spot on, and I thought they did a really good job with that in the movies. And when Mjolnir was lifted in that last fight scene, and the crowd went wild. I was in that theater premiere night, and I went wild, and the crowd went wild because everybody in there was a geek just like me and knew that was probably Captain America picking that up. And because Thanos was beating up Thor at that time. And when he throws the hammer at him, comes back and he catches it and the crowd went wild. I just loved it. So that shelf has a Diamond Select statue of Captain America holding up Mjolnir from Endgame, along with the Captain America helmet and from the Winter Soldier and Captain America, and then Mjolnir. And then I have a full-size bust of the Dark Knight, the mask from the Dark Knight movie. And then I have a really cool Diamond Select statue of Batman and Robin from the Dark Knight. I also have the if you've ever watched the 1966 TV show, the Shakespeare bust where the head gets tilted back, and that's how he pushes the button to get into his Batcave. Is anyone familiar with that?
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, well, I have that bust, but it's a bank, but the head tilts back, and it's the opening to the bank. I also, yeah, it's super cool. I also am a huge Walking Dead fan. I like the show. I like the books. I was a big fan of it. I have Walking Dead collectible models and even the McFarlane, like, mini building sets. And actually my fiance bought me one of the mini building sets I have. They don't make them anymore, but she bought me one of the ones I didn't have for Christmas, which I put together. And beyond that, the rest of the stuff in here, I have, like, a Diamond Select Brandon Lee the Crow statue, and then I have the Trick or Treat Studios 12-inch tall Michael Myers from the 1978 original, and then a bunch more Michael Myers stuff. And then as I look around, I've got a John Wick Diamond Select stack, and then I have a ton of Universal Monsters stuff, the Mummy, Frankenstein's Monster, obviously, busts and figures and statues, the Creature from the Black Lagoon, and I have a really cool statue that's a one of a kind that was made by a local artist here in the Dayton area, and it was a 3D printed statue about 15 inches tall, and it's from the scene from the Wolfman movie where he's holding the female, I can't think of her name, and she's kind of fainted out, and it's hand painted, and I have that up in my collection as well.
Wow.
Jeez, wow, okay. Yeah, definitely one of the nerds, which is great because I am too, so I love that.
Awesome.
Well, yeah, that's wonderful, Brian. And by the way, I'm going to jump in right here. It's the bottom of the hour, and this is ScaryCast Network with Dr. John Stamey, Dr. Trey Dunaway, Robin McCray, Kyler Smith, and our special guest is Brian Nyford, sponsored by Transamerica, the insurance company that will take care of you when you need taken care of. It's there with you for life. Transamerica, don't be insured without it. And by the way, I'm going to just keep on going. Brian, I don't know, you're going to cost me a lot of money at the end of this podcast, because when you talk about The Walking Dead, one of my very best friends, and she celebrated my birthday with me on ScaryCast this year, is Sonya Thompson, the most famous lady zombie of all time. She was on the cover of Entertainment Magazine with season two of The Walking Dead. She's going to be at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference. She's always going to be at the Georgia Bigfoot Conference because she lives right near there and one of the sweetest ladies. And we're going to have to get a Brian Nyford drawing of Sonya Thompson as a zombie. So we'll be talking about that one, okay?
All right, that sounds good.
Hey, Brian, when you said Walking Dead, I you didn't know this, but you hit the jackpot with John.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, my God, yes, you're right.
The bells started going off, and I knew that was that's right up his alley. And I think I also figured out, you know, I don't know too many scary movies like you do, John, but on Saturdays, I was always watching the Tarzan movies. I'd always choose Tarzan movies over scary movies, and that's where I've lost my scary movie education. So, Brian, have you ever done Tarzan in horror?
No, I have not. I have not. That has not come up yet, but I'm also a fan of Tarzan. And funny
that's
story,
Saturday, that was Saturday movie when I was a kid, I remember, the Tarzan movie, so.
Yeah, my fiance and I were talking about Tarzan movies the other day, and just like 3 or 4 days ago, and I was talking about different ones, and she says, well, I love this one. She pulls it up, and it's the cartoon Tarzan, and I'm like, well, I like the real one better, but it's just funny we had that conversation the other day.
Well, it's interesting. My daughter is both of my daughters are artistic, but one daughter went to the Governor's School of South Carolina for visual arts, so she really is artistic. And you know, it's just amazing what can pop into her brain, and then just like you do it, it doesn't take you any time at all to execute a drawing, and boom, done. And sometimes it's just a home run. It's an amazing process. I don't have that ability or a talent.
It's you know, lots of people have gifts and they're all different. You know, there's people that can look at certain mathematical equations and figure them out without doing anything. And I don't have that gift or talent. You know, everybody is unique, and it's just fun finding the thing that you're good at, that you love, and then being able to try to do something with it and, you know, actually try to make a career of it, which is what I'm trying to do right now.
I always told my kids, if you find something you love and you can get paid for doing it, then you've won.
Right. Exactly right.
You've won. You know, that's it. That's super.
You better believe it. And that's great. By the way, I just had a mental block. I know there's Tarzan and I know there's Jane. Who was the chimpanzee that followed Tarzan around? What was his name? Who?
Cheetah,
that's right. It was Tarzan, Jane, and Cheetah. You're right. Oh, I couldn't
and
remember.
Boy.
That's great.
And don't forget Boy.
Yeah. Boy?
Boy.
Oh, was that the young
Son of Tarzan.
Dude?
Son of Tarzan, Boy.
Oh.
Tarzan wasn't into really – he didn't enter naming kids real deeply. Tarzan was a pretty straightforward guy, you know.
Yeah, he fought crime and swung on vines and loved Jane. So, I mean, what more can you say? That's really great.
Yeah.
Trey, thank you very much for that. You just brought all the humor in the world there to ScaryCast. That was wonderful. All right. Well, now, Brian, I got to ask you this. Where is your artwork going, and where are your comic books going? Now, I know you can't divulge all the secrets, but where's the comic book going? Now, the idea of Dracula and Frankenstein, because I've got to get this out on the table, being the superheroes to fight the Nazis, I'm going to tell you I'm probably the only person in the world that finds Van Helsing repulsive, a demon, and a bad guy. Am I the only guy that hates Van Helsing? Because I'm such a big Dracula fan. I mean,
So I never thought Van Helsing should be a real competition for Dracula. And actually, in one of my flashback flashback stories, because for anybody that's ever seen the original Highlander movie, I love you pick up at one time period, and then you get little bits of what got you there in the past. And that's the way I wrote this comic book, because I think that's cool, because you get that, well, why is that? How is that possible? And then you get the, reveal in the past. This is why we're here where we are. And so Van Helsing, funnily enough, I tell back in one of my issues, I think it's issue 5 or 6, I can't remember which one, that Van Helsing actually is hunting Dracula, just like he does in some of the versions and iterations of it. However, Dracula is really a hero, even back then. There's a point in time where Dracula loses his way and becomes a bit of a monster in my story, but it cost him people that were very close to him in his quest for revenge. And when that happens, he realizes he's broken and he just kind of wants off to die, but he doesn't die. And he reinvents himself, but tells these horrible stories about himself to all the villagers, and everybody hears all these stories about him that are horrible. And he also releases fake reasons of how he can die, like a stake through the heart will kill him, sunlight will kill him. And in my version of Dracula, none of that's true. It's all just something he put out there so people would think that's what they would do if they ever came to hunt him. So he didn't want to give anyone any kind of advantage and tell anyone to know how he would really die. So he puts out these false stories. But in the I can't remember what year it is, but he's still in his castle, and Van Helsing comes to kill him, and Dracula's talking to him, even though Van Helsing can't see him yet because he knows he's there, and he says, "You're very brave to come this far. No one else comes this far. You know, I applaud you for that." And when Van Helsing sees him, he throws a wooden cross with sharpened points at him, which hits him in the heart. And Dracula acts like it really hurts him. And then Van Helsing pulls off the curtain because it's daytime, and the sunlight comes in, and Dracula starts laughing and basically says, "I bet you thought that cross was going to kill me, and I bet you thought that sunlight was going to burn me." And Van Helsing stands there shocked and doesn't understand, and Van Helsing says, "Let me tell you about me." And they end up becoming the best of friends. And there's something that happens that leads this whole – I don't want to give the story away for anybody that wants to read it, because – at the end of the first issue, you see there's a hook. That hook has – I've had people videotape their remark, their reaction to that, and send it to me of loved ones that were reading it after they had read it, and they let their loved ones read it, and they said at the end of the first issue. And then I have people that will come up and buy issue 1 at the con or issue 1 through 8 at the con, and then come back to me the next day and say, "I read issue 1. Man, I cannot believe the end of issue 1. That was awesome." And because I don't want to reveal that – on a podcast for anybody that might get to not yet to read it, that might want to read it. But there's Dracula and Van Helsing are chasing Victor von Frankenstein throughout history for a few years. And something happens that ends up costing Van Helsing his life. And it sets this whole story into motion. And so you involve Victor von Frankenstein in the past. That's how Frankenstein's monster meets Dracula. And when it comes to Van Helsing, in the modern times, in 1945, I think it's his great-great-great-great-grandson is a member of a commando team in World War II that knows about the existence of Dracula and Frankenstein's monster, and they're actually there to help them because both the UK and the USA have knowledge of who Dracula and Frankenstein's monster are, even though they haven't been seen in a very long time. And both governments want to find them and help them because they know of the history due to the fact of Van Helsing's great-great-grandson being involved in the war and the secrets that have been passed down in his family throughout time.
Clever twist.
Wow.
Thank you.
That's amazing. All right, I'll place an order for one. You're going to cost me so much money, I can't have you back for a while. I got to order now, 1 through 8? This is great.
Yeah.
This is amazing. All right, Robin, what do you have to say? Are you Are you enjoying this as much as I am?
Yeah, you know, I'm just like I said, I keep looking at these while I'm listening to everybody talk. I keep looking at these drawings, and I'm just shocked at how real and lifelike they are. They're fantastic.
Thank you.
I mean, I would encourage everybody to go on Facebook, go on as well, take a look at some of these things that he's done because they're exceptional. They really, really are.
Thank you very much. That means a lot to me.
And Robin,
even left a review.
Oh, my goodness. And Robin, now I'm going to put you on the spot. I hope you don't mind me putting you on the spot, but I know that you are a person that knows a lot about cryptids and monsters and things like that. Do you have anything you'd like to share about the vampire lore that we really haven't talked about? I mean, I don't know. I've never asked you that question.
I don't deal with a lot of vampires, and there's nothing against it. I have enough cryptids to deal with on an everyday basis. I mean, quite honestly, I mean, you know, the Bigfoot, the Dogman, the Cat People, the Lizard Man, Elementals, Dimensionals, ETs, that kind of thing. So that's my reality on a daily basis. So I'm being honest, I don't know a lot about, per se, the vampires. I really and truly don't. Pick a lot of the other cryptids, I'm your gal. But that one I really don't know a lot about. I mean, the basics, yeah, but not a lot about it.
All right. Well, then I will ask you, and please don't yell at me tomorrow for asking you this question because I don't think I've ever asked it. Maybe I did one time kind of secondhand. But we're doing the Frogman Festival up in Cincinnati, and that is March 4th. And
right.
Do you have any feelings or any ideas about the Frogman?
Well, they're legitimate. I mean, really, we have to be honest and say that not only is it a possibility, but there have been countless sightings of it. And then you go back genetically as to how are these things created. We know how these things are created. We have two ways. One is they're ET created because they take our DNA, they cross it with their DNA, and they take a third DNA. So in that case, it would be a frog. The other option that we have, and unfortunately it's a reality in our world, is government. The government creates hybrids. They create cryptids. Some they keep there. Some they cut loose just to see what's going to happen, and that's a possibility as well. So, but, you know, we've had reliable sources tell us that when they've had contact with the ET, including myself, their thing is, wait to see what we drop off next. You know, this is what they do. So do I believe that there is a frogman? 110,000,000%. There's been too many people that have spotted it. I don't believe that people in various parts of the world or country are going to randomly, not knowing that anybody else has seen it, come up with this. And knowing what I know about the ETs, knowing what I know about the genetics of the cryptids themselves, I absolutely believe it's real. And I tell you, the drawing that Brian did is tremendous. I don't think he could have been more spot on if he had one walk up and shake his hands.
I had heard, of course, the Frogmen of Loveland. I didn't know much about them. When I had talked to John about getting a table, and then I got a call back, and he's like, "Do you want to do a Frogman poster?" I was like, "Yeah, sure." And so I started like Googling Frogmen, obviously, and then I read lots of stuff about them. And an interesting fact is that I don't know if it was Loveland or a Mason police officer. I can't remember what agency it was. Back in the 70s, actually shot at one and tried to kill it. And then on ice, I think it was Icy Road. And then he ended up like later on recanting his story and saying it wasn't a frogman that he shot at. But, you know, for that to actually occur for a police officer,
government starts
there. Yeah, firearm in the line of duty. I mean, all of that stuff is tracked, right? So even back then, that kind of stuff was tracked, and it's crazy to read that he, you know, I was a frogman, I shot at him, and I'm like, that's insane. But I couldn't find a lot of good visual references. Most of the drawings of the frogmen out there were pretty horrendous, and I was like,
they're not exactly pretty.
Yeah, I'm going to do this guy justice. You know,
like
I feel
like
there's a lot.
Like the guy that shot him. Most of them recant their story. I said, like the guy that claimed to have shot one. You know, you have to, I'm not going to say just 100% believe everything that's said to you because I don't encourage that, but you have to be realistic and say, with every cryptid that's out there, whenever one is shot, whenever one is killed, who gets the bodies? The government. And then everybody, nobody's allowed to talk about it. There's the threats and all that other garbage. So, you know, you have to take it seriously to a degree. But I will say this, the thing that really impressed me was the legs that you drew on it. What we're finding with these cryptids is the head seems to be what's different. Maybe the skin, maybe the hair, what kind. But when it comes down to the legs, they're very similar to ours. Like with your dog, man, you have a little bit of a canine feature, but it's still more not only bipedal, but it has a little bit more of the humanism to it than, per se, like a regular dog. And I think you really captured the one on the frogman beautifully.
Thank you. I was looking at all the research on the frogman, and I'm like, well, if they're walking around upright, they're going to have a more humanoid type of leg than they would a frog type of leg, just because the joints and the way the ligaments would be. So that's why I drew it like that. I wanted to nail it, and I wanted to do justice to the frogman because a lot of the drawings out there, like I said, that I could find were not good. And I thought that if there's this many people that love this and want to know about this, then they should have something they can look at that they might actually like, and it should be good art. So,
yeah, it's tremendous. Kudos, because you really, really did a good job. Like I said, I was looking at the photo that is up on ScaryCast, and it's good. I mean, I don't think you could have gotten closer to it if you really had one come up and say hi.
Hi.
You've got it down to the muscle detail.
Bullfrog's skin coloring to lay out the map for the way that the skin was colored, and I wanted it to, because I mean if it is the frog map, it's probably going to have details like that, and I wanted to give a little bit of a scare. I just wanted to give a little bit of a scare factor too, make it look a little bit intimidating.
Yeah, they all look intimidating. Yeah, the other thing that I was impressed with too is, when it comes to the cryptids, when people draw them, they tend to forget it's not the size of the muscles that you're drawing, but it's the fact that whatever size of the muscle that you draw, it's taut, it's solid. It's a muscle, and it looks like a muscle that's already flexed, even before they flex it. And a lot of people I've noticed when they do these drawings, I per se cannot draw an egg, okay? The most talented I have is I can make the head of Snoopy. So we know that Robin is never going to draw these things. But the muscles really are a big part of it. Like I said, their muscles, no matter how, it's not the size, I mean, they're muscular in size anyway, but it's the fact that they look, even when they're not flexed, like a tight muscle. And a lot of people I've noticed when they go to do these drawings, they don't really show that. And you had that in the Frogman one, and that was really impressive to me.
Thank you. I think that most of these creatures would be less bulky and more. They're not going to be these. I've seen some of that, what you're talking about. Now, Bigfoot, I think, is probably a little bit bulkier. And when I drew the poster, I drew him as such, not like gigantically bulky, but obviously to carry a frame of bones around the size that Bigfoot is, it's going to be a little bit more muscle, a little bit more bulky. The frogman is only supposed to be 3 to 4 foot tall, right? So,
yeah.
But even with the version of the Mothman that I'm working on, I don't think that a creature has to be bulky and gigantically muscular to be very powerful. And my Mothman is not is not going to be bulky and muscular. It's going to be long, lean, and taut, because they're part animal. And you know, I love dogs. I have a pit bull, and she is solid muscle. She's a big dog, but she's not, you know, it's all taut. You know what I'm saying? Like all the muscle, you can see it just it's pulled tight at all times, even when she's just laying there sleeping like a big meathead, you know. So
exactly.
that's why I drew it that way. I'm glad you commented on that, because not a lot of people have seen that, I don't think.
Yeah, it really impressed me, because like I said, with a lot of the, and I have people that send me, you know, sketches and drawings of them, of the cryptids all the time, and they do a very good job. I'm not knocking anybody at all. But the one thing that I don't think people really grasp is, and you're not going to unless you've had physical sightings or you've been right up next to them or anything, but those muscles are taut. They are hard. I don't care if they're moving or not. I had a female that brought the baby up to the house, and when she would move, she had very, very long hair. She looked like Cousin Ed off of the, you know, off of the Addams Family. And she would move, and those muscles were so taut, and she was just walking. She wasn't flexing. She was walking, and the hair would literally part on the muscles. You know, so it goes past just the sheer size. It's, that's how tight these muscles are.
That's a great point.
Take that into consideration, Brian. Robin knows.
I am.
All right. Well, thank you, Robin. Great comments. All right, Kyler, we'd like to let you have one more round with him. And then tonight, Dr. Trey Dunaway is going to have our last word with Brian and for ScaryCast. So, Kyler, what is your comment or question for Brian?
Well, Brian, you seem very open to the fact that there is more than just us out here roaming around. So how did that happen? Where did that switch? Because that's not normal for everybody. You just be like, oh,
so
okay.
I we don't have a lot of time left, but when I was 18, my buddy and I were sitting on the second story of his house, the way his house was designed. There was you could go out on like the roof of the first story, and sit there. We were sitting out there. It was nighttime, and we did it often. And right across the street, about 50 yards off of the main road in the woods, we heard some cracking and branches being destroyed. It wasn't close to us. We weren't scared, but it was moving very fast. And I remember there was a full moon out that night. I looked up, and I was like, and we were both like, what the hell is that? And we knew it wasn't a deer. We knew it wasn't anything like that. And we saw a brown, almost like dark brown blur, because that's all we could see because the way the moon was, just moving at a high rate of speed and breaking branches and moving. But it appeared to be upright. And we both looked at each other. And I remember looking at him. I go, "Was that Bigfoot?" And he's like, "I don't know what the hell that was." And that was when I started opening my mind, and I started looking around. And, you know, there's so much evidence out there for being visited by other planets and UFOs, and the government's finally starting to release some of that there's definitely more out there than what we know. And I'm just open to it because, you know, if you go into life or every day thinking you know everything about anything, then you're already losing out, because you're losing out.
There you go.
You know,
beautiful.
So that's where that came from.
Okay. Yeah, well, I like the way you ended that too.
Thank you.
All right. Great question and great answer. Dr. Trey Dunaway, you are in charge of our last word tonight, because you are, and we know you're going to have a great last word tonight with Brian Nyford for ScaryCast on the ScaryCast Network. And the floor is yours, Dr. Trey.
My comment is more of a comment, and it's an observation. It's more philosophical. You know, we go through our lives, and we have to earn a living, and we have to provide for people. And it's scary to change. And one of the best things you can do for anybody is to give them permission to change. And Brian, you're a classic example of someone who decided to do a change, and it's a little scary, like you said, but when you do that change, sometimes you can even amaze yourself. And congratulations on doing that change and finding a second career in something. I don't know what did you do to earn a living when you weren't an artist? Or you weren't practicing as an artist?
I was I was a police officer and a detective.
There you go. Well, you're used to blood and gore, and you gave yourself permission to change, and I applaud you and hope that you have that message for other people as well. Congratulations.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Trey. That was a brilliant question, actually, and something a lot of people should think about. So we are about at the top of the hour, and I want to thank our hosts, Robin McCrae, the Queen of ScaryCast, Dr. Trey Dunaway, the Surgeon General of ScaryCast, and Kyler Smith down in Houston, Texas. And Kyler and I'll announce a little bit. We're talking about something interesting for Kyler on the ScaryCast Network, so more after we do some more talking. And Brian Nyford, thank you so much. We've got your artwork up there on Facebook, and we're so glad to have you here tonight, and we're going to have you back. You cost me a lot of money. We're going to do more commissions, and I don't know what to say, but thank you. And I'm so glad that you wanted – I'm so glad that the Frogman drew you into our web of ScaryCast. So thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Me too. Me too. Thank you very much, Dr. John. Thanks, everybody, and thanks for the great.
All right.
Thank you, Brian.
Well, great. And I want everyone to be sure to stay tuned at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time for the great Clyde Lewis and Ground Zero, the number one paranormal podcast in the world. So everybody stay in touch with us. We'll see you next week. We've got another great show, the same cast of hosts, and another really interesting guest. So this is Dr. John Stamey signing off from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. We'll see you next ScaryCast. Everybody say goodbye now.
Bye.
Night.
Bye.
Bye, guys.